Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Imagine having all the odds stacked against you in life. Well, you're going to meet my friend Anthony Trucks. He was put into foster care at age 3. He was then adopted at age 14, a black man into a white family. He was never expected to go to college, and yet he made it to the NFL, and he went through some very difficult times after. He's going to tell you about his lowest lows, something that he had never actually shared before. And then he turned it all around, and just an absolutely amazing story. You're going to love this. You're going to also learn the 5 things you need to do to shift your identity so that you become a better, more effective, more successful person, no matter what odds you are facing. So let's get into the show with my friend, Anthony. Anthony, my man, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here, man, hang out with you. You're a cool guy. I like your hat.
Thank you. Thank you very much, my friend. I really appreciate it. Now, you've come a long way, you know, from football to presenter on stage, high energy, you know, coach to so many people. And you've got a book coming out in September about identity, resilience, and resourcefulness. Did I get all 3 of those things right?
Well, it's about identity, but definitely resilience and resourcefulness is all tied into there. Those are some of the kind of things that randomly fall into the bubble.
How did you get started on this path?
Oh, I was born. I think it's how it works, right?
Hey, same as me. That's how I started mine too.
Yeah. I mean, I had a really interesting childhood. And I think from the childhood, it kind of led to a lot of just life. And then I broke my life, which, you know, the greats seem to do that at some point. So like ruined it. And then I ended up figuring out a way to come back. And it was all dialed in from honestly just me understanding who I am at an identity level. Who is Anthony or who do I want to be? And then having to be resilient in a lot of different areas of my life, whether it's personal, professional, or business, big time. And then I'm very resourceful, man. Like I'm the guy that I save every, like when we get things that are like put together stuff, I have a weird box of stuff. Because I like to fix things with weird things that don't make sense. I recently fixed the chairs in my dining room because I was bored with the like old brackets from some blinds at one of the houses we own that I just kept from when we put it up. It was just weird. Like it sure enough works, right? So I'm resourceful. I do not like being stuck for very long. If I want to figure it out, I find ways.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So let's go to the breaking point, you know, because that's often where, you know, people connect with the guests here. So tell us all about the good, bad, and ugly there for the breaking point and how you got back on track.
So, I mean, just think fast. So as a kid, I was given away in a foster care group in an all white family, a lot of crazy. I was not statistically supposed to like be in this world. So at 3 years old, I was put into a really, really crazy childhood. And then,
what part of the country were you in?
San Francisco Bay Area. I was born in Martinez. Yeah.
Okay.
Grew up in a town called Antioch. The only claim to fame for Antioch is J.C. Dugard was kind of taken here. So sadly, she's the girl who was like kept underneath the backyard of some guy's house for 18 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember that.
It's a really weird. Yeah. But that's like we're really just not the greatest town in the world. Yeah. But no, I got a college scholarship after beating the odds. My adoptive mom got diagnosed with MS. I wasn't even adopted until I was 14. So 11 years in the system. And man, statistics are funny for foster kids. 75% of prison inmates in America are foster kids or former, half a homeless population, like less than 1% of us will ever graduate from college. So like the moment my mom gave me away at 3, I was slipped into a weird statistic of not supposed to do well. Wow. And had a woman love me, man. I had an adoptive mom who loved me. I was one of 6 kids, really poor growing up, but I figured out how to get to the next level, man. So I was able to be good enough at a sport that at first I sucked at, figured it out, got to college, in college, played it smart, man. Had a kid at 19. So I'm in college with a kid and I married my high school sweetheart right out of college. Met my real dad, my very first collegiate start on national television. Got this game ball the same day I met him, which is super weird, but cool. And he had no idea I existed. I didn't even know his name until I was 21 or 20 years old. And then
So you didn't know that. How did it come about that the connection was made?
Oh, my real mom, who was MIA for a long time, somehow got my phone numbers. My grandma got my phone number, real grandma, and started like talking to me and calling me. And it was really weird. And then at one point, my high school sweetheart, we were like the cutest couple in the yearbook, actually. And I was homecoming king of all odd things. She ends up giving me his name. Like, she wouldn't at first. My fiance kept pressing me to get the name. So I finally got the name. So my last name from my dad's side is Asaibovo. So I'm actually a first generation Nigerian American, part of the Itsekiri tribe. You know, I'm apparently a prince, which all Nigerians are princes, I guess, apparently. I might be a genuine one, though, but I don't want your money. Don't send me a check.
Thank you. I was just about to try and figure out how can I make a joke about that without sounding.
Yeah. I don't care, man. I'm a bunch of weird jokes over here. But no, then I met my dad. Then I got out of college and into the NFL. NFL is a weird beast, man. It stands for not for long. So you get in, you get hurt, you get out. Third year, came home, and this is where it all fell apart, man. So
Where did you play, just for the people keeping score at home?
Yeah, the Buccaneers, the Redskins are now the Washington football team, and the Steelers. That was my last like run, and I tore my shoulder playing against the Philadelphia Eagles, the first preseason game. All my teammates went on to win a Super Bowl that year, and I had to sit home and watch them because I was like, nah, send me home. Give me a check. I'll be good. And yeah. Wow. So now I enter life after football, and it's where most people fall apart. Something like
that. Well, let me ask you one more question about your younger years.
Oh, please.
Was there a teacher? I mean, it sounds like your mom was amazing. Was there a teacher, a coach that saw in you something that you may have not seen in yourself that was a huge influence?
There were a couple people, I think. It wasn't so much that I had talent, because I didn't really have much talent. Oddly enough, I didn't even play the game until I was 14, like really with Helen. Most guys are playing when they're 8 or 9, so I'm way behind. But I was really bad. I had three guys. I had a guy named Chris Matthews, who was my receiver coach, a guy named George Flores, and a guy named Tim Manley. Tim Manley was like a former football guy, was like the yard duty, kind of like security of the campus. Mm-hmm. The other guys were coaches, and they just were just good humans, man. They really showed up, and they had us work, and it wasn't like I got special treatment. I was just forced to work like everybody else, but there was a different sense of when I would do well, they let me know I did well. And I had my ups and downs and everything, but they were always there, man, supportive. And sure enough, they helped me go to the next level. And it was funny as I found out years, like during that time, like my junior year, maybe, is the principal at my school, Jeff Rich, they'd talked about me and going to college. And actually the principal was like, he's not going to make it to college. Like, he was telling people that, like, I wasn't going to get out of school and go to college. It was super weird for the principal to say.
Yeah.
But one of the guys was like, hey, I think if you stay the course, you might be able to play in the NFL. Like my senior year, it was a guy named Tim Manley. And I was like, all right. Like, it wasn't so much that I believed him. I just heard it. Cause my mom and dad, I grew up all white family. Nobody's athletes. I wasn't like an athlete, obese, very overweight. So no one's an athlete but me, you know. It's just, I'm the only guy kind of floating around. So like, no one cared what I was doing. I'm just, he's playing football. And then all of a sudden it becomes real and I'm going to college on it. But that was kind of like the people who in the background for sports were there pushing. My mom just loved me. She just loved on me. She helped me.
Were all the other children in your in that home biological, or were they
biological? Yeah, I'm one of one, man.
man, what a story this is. And then so you were talking about how it was now we're into life after football. So take us there.
Yeah. So we get life after football is interesting because I come home and like for me, a lot of years, if you give yourself to something for long enough, it's who you are. Right. It just, you get this sense of confidence and credibility. You have an identity wrapped around that. And I came home and I lost it all. And, you know, I football's gone. I don't know who I am. You know, I've got a wife. I've got 3 kids now. I got a 4-year-old and brand new twins we had. I got this gym business. So I dumped all the extra NFL money I had left into it. And I had no gym membership prior to, no business plan, no clients. I think we were looking at like $8,000 a month in rent. We didn't know what we were doing. I had no idea.
So back in California?
Back in California. And it was in 2008, the big crisis, right? So there's no money. So not only I got all that stuff going on, I now have a situation where I'm getting out of shape because I'm stressing. I'm looking at bankruptcy. Literally got handed eviction papers like 9 months in. My wife ends up having an affair. So I'm like dealing with this, you know, like, I don't feel like a man, dude. Like, I feel like everything in my life fell apart quite literally. Hmm. And honestly, one night I was like, this is too much. Like, if this is life after football, I don't want to be here, man. And I was like, I'm good. And sent a text to my friends and family with full intention of executing him. Like I said, please tell my kids who their father was. And I was out looking for rat poison. And it was like 10 o'clock at night. So nothing was open. And like the rush of the moments just kind of passed. But yeah, dark. I went dark, man. It was a very, very like shallow place. Cause whenever
you're 25 now, 25, 26
at the time. Yeah. Cause just, I mean, the thing that's hard is whenever you have something that makes you feel like you're like you matter. Right. And then it's ripped from you. You really sit there wondering like, what in the world, who am I supposed to be? What do I do? And then when you can't find a light, like, what do you do? Cause now my marriage is falling apart. I'm not a present father. My business is doing horrible. I'm out of shape and I don't have any football to lean back on. I'm like, I'm nobody. Yeah. And it's a very dark, dark, you know, kind of place to fall. That's why 77% of NFL guys go bankrupt within 3 years. Like, we don't have anything. We're not taught how to live life. I'm entering this world that sucks. And
yeah.
So yeah, man, I went to this fog and
did you at any point go that, you know, did you look at like everything's closed? That's the sign that my life should be open. You know, like, did you look at it that way at all?
No, I think at the other time I didn't. Because here's the thing is I didn't have skill sets for anything else. So like not only is it all taken away, I don't have anything to lean on. I don't have anything. I'm quite literally go from being a guy that's in the NFL and I have all this stuff and a family and the house and the car and the business to I'm a nobody and I have nothing.
Yeah.
Like it's an empty hole, man. It's what Viktor Frankl calls it existential vacuum. you got nothing.
Yeah, and mentioned one of my favorite authors. I just reread that book for the fourth time recently because I think it strengthens your spine. That's for sure.
Yeah, it does. So
I'm glad you mentioned something from him.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I didn't read that book till later. I almost accidentally came out of the hole, to be honest. It wasn't even like an intentional climb at a certain point. It was.
Yeah. You don't have the heavens opened and showed me the way. It was just.
There was moments. You know, what happened was I got to this point where I was like in the fog. I call it the fog because it's that space, you know, where everything fell apart and then you're just surviving.
Yeah.
You just get up and survive. That's what I was doing for a couple of years from 2011 to April 15, 2014. I was just floating, man. It was just, I was running around. I was at one point living in a 500 square foot studio apartment behind the house of one of my trainer's girlfriends. Cause it was the only place I could find like a spot to live that I could afford. Cause I was broke, but I had a 9,000 square foot gym. Like I'm with multiple women, which really isn't my thing, but like, what do you do when you're lonely? You've been with somebody since you're 16. It's just,
yeah,
just a really, I would seriously listen to this, man. I had a gym. I would go to the gym in the morning, train people, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you know, it dies down.
Yeah.
I'd go home, bro. I'd hit a pack of Blue Moons, like 6-pack of Blue Moons, go back to the gym at like 3 o'clock and like, let's go to work. Like this was, that was in a hole, man. And
I mean, like, you know, knowing you today, and that's the way it always is, you know, knowing the person today, you're like, you can't even imagine that sort of thing. I just can't imagine you having a blue, six-pack Blue Moon, but, all right. So you get to April, 2014 and what happens?
My mom and I, and my dad and my grandma sit in a room and it's not
biological.
No, my adoptive mom.
Got it. Okay.
So she is at the back end of her 70s.
There's a lot of characters in this movie.
There's a lot of people. So my adoptive mom, my adoptive dad, my grandma, my adoptive grandma, and me, everybody else had kind of like went to lunch. My mom was like, she was really kind of in a tough time. She'd always been to the hospital back and forth, but it was like really bad this time. And
okay.
So we'd all had these moments to like share with her. And I'd sat with her and I was just sitting there holding her hand. I remember my dad and I watching her take her last breath, man, like just inhaling and right. Really. It's a very mortal moment. It's difficult. Cause it's weird. I say it's weird. Cause at one moment you're like happy she's out of pain cause she wasn't her. And then other side, it's like, man, life is short. She was 47. Like life is short, dude.
Yeah. And I was there when my father passed away at 69. And, I mean, it's just like, whoa, what just happened there?
Yeah, it hits you. It's a wash, man. And I mean, I had time with her prior to her passing, but an hour beforehand, we'd all got moments to go in while she was kind of unconscious and just talk to her. Mm-hmm. And this is genuine. I actually made these two promises because in these moments I was like, man, I'm floating through life. I'm in a fog and I physically can do things, but I'm not. And she is one of the big reasons why I don't have this. I'm not a statistic, you know?
Yeah.
And I made two promises, legitimate two promises. And this is before I even knew this world existed, by the way. I had no idea of this speaking. I was still a gym owner. And I promised that, Mom, I'm going to figure this thing of life out. I'm going to get myself back on track. And I promise, like, I'm going to make my life great again in some way. And then two, I said, when I do it, I'm going to do what you did for me and help in an unconditional way, love the world. Like, I didn't know what it looked like. My thing was the gym at the time. Like, if I can push her heart forward, it's going to be do what she did for me. Just love people you don't know and just find ways to make them better. I was like, I'll just find a way to do that. And so the next couple of years was me digging to figure out who in the hell I am. That's why I came across Viktor Frankl, Stephen Covey, the Landmark, all these different things I was doing. Mm-hmm. And at this time, though, I'm also struggling to figure out, like, how do I get the business running? How do I work on me as a human and relationship? I bought these books. I'm in programs and courses, all this stuff going on. And I was still kind of floating, dude. And then it happened to be, this is where like the real catalyst, it's an odd moment, but I'd kind of figured some things out. I was doing well. I got this big consulting contract for the gym business, but like it was draining through it. I'm just burning through the money.
Yeah.
I got like booked to go speak in Russia for fitness. And so I'm just doing that. But like I'm bouncing around. I meet this girl in Russia in 2015. I come home January 2016. I'd flown her back for New Year's and I wake up next to her. I can't speak her language. She can't speak mine. Where just, you know, like this is something I've started sharing recently, but never did before. But like we had bought like a 20 pack of condoms and like I was down 16 in like 3 days. And it's seriously, this is like a really dark moment because I get up on New Year's Day and I go in the bathroom and look at myself. And I'm disgusted, man. Like I would legitimately was like, I would never want my daughter to be with a guy like me. I would never want my boys to be like me. My mom would not approve of this and my God wouldn't let me into heaven. It was a really heavy, like shame.
Yeah.
And I swore everybody off, man. Like legit, I swore women off. I hung out with lotion a lot, but be honest.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it was just me. And I sat on a brown couch facing this brown wall. And I just asked a lot of deep, deep questions, a lot of realizations, man. And that's where it kind of, I started waking up. And it was this kind of understanding of like, I just wasn't the guy. Like I didn't have the things. I wasn't the person I liked. I just, all these things kind of unraveling. And this is kind of where identity oddly started kind of making sense for me. Because for a lot of my life, I had the skill sets, but I think I reached the outside edge of what my identity was capable of achieving and doing. And I needed to upgrade it. Like I needed to figure out how to upgrade whatever the programming was to be able to handle things, navigate things. And so I started doing that work, like really accidentally. I'd had hard conversations. Like I went at a conversation with the guy who slept with my wife. You know, like I had conversations with guys who'd stolen money from me. I forgave my ex-wife for her situation in the role because although she made a really crappy choice, like it took two people to get to that point of making a choice. You know, like, so I wasn't the best. I was gone at the gym 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., not bringing home money. She got 3 kids at a house. Like, you know, she wasn't doing it to maliciously hurt me. She needed something I wasn't giving her. So like there's aspects to where I took my blame and my ownership. And do fast forward from January in 2016, like I think it was October 2016, in a weird roundabout way, somehow after 3 years divorce and custody battles, my wife and I came back together. We're in an amazing marriage now, 4 years deep. I figured this part of life out. I became a present father. Like I got back in shape. The business started moving smoother. And then I started doing like the things that made me feel like I was a good man, if I can explain it that way.
Sure.
I liked myself again when I looked in the mirror. And then I pretty much like, you know what? I figured part one out. I made promise one happen. Now I work on promise two. And that was like, okay, how do I take what I just did and then help other people who are also in funky, crazy places, like figure these things out with the use of all the stuff. Cause dude, I had a library of books. I was in masterminds for 3-4 years and I still was not getting traction. And it wasn't because of the information. It was just who I was with it. And when I figured out that aspect to it, now I could actually find a way to have other people do it. So in a weird way, I made this identity shift from that guy to this guy. And now I teach people to do the exact same thing. It's more of how do I get them to a better rhythm? And that's my world, man.
It's amazing and such a powerful story. So were you raised in with your adoptive parents? Were you raised in a home of faith or was that something that you came about to on your own or later? Yeah.
So we were like it was more of like we were Christians on Easter and Christmas, you know, like
Sure.
But it was actually, oddly enough, it was a moment where I'd gone on a college recruiting trip to Washington, University of Washington, Washington State University, sorry, up in the Palouse. And I go up there and I take a trip and there's a guy that had gone to my high school, like a crosstown high school rivals. And I went to this party and this guy named Marty, like takes me in a back room. He's like, hey, pick one of these girls. And it was like really unsettling because I was still dating my girl back in high school. And it's like kind of what they do. And then all of a sudden this guy, Chris Hurd, comes out of nowhere. The guy from my high school is like, hey, you want to go to the stadium and have a chat? Like, cool, let's go for a walk. I was uncomfortable. I wanted to get out there anyways. And he takes me to the top of the stadium. It's all in the snow. And he says, hey, man, you know, how's your faith? I was like, what do you mean? That's my faith. He's like, you know, do you have a base? I was like, I don't know. He says, well, you're about to step into a world away from family with a lot of temptation. If you have no stability, you might lose yourself. I was like, interesting. And like, and that was kind of like a conversation. It's like, just, you know, kind of step into it, figure it out. Here's where it took place. Weird. That same trip, I fly home. to San Francisco. I get out of the airport. There's a guy holding a sign with my name on it, brown, like a burgundy van. And he's going to take me an hour to my house. And the guy, I kid you not, he was about a little shorter than me. I probably said like 5'10", you know, maybe 5'11"-ish. And he has like this olive skin, like brown hair to his shoulders. The dude looks like Jesus. And I'm not saying that because it sounds good for the story. He just did. And I got in the car and he starts the car. First question he asked, are you saved? He asked some 18-year-old kid who just got out of the airport, you know, like, are you saved? I was like, that's weird you asked. I just had a conversation for the first time about this on the flight before. So he's like, can I share my testimony? The whole ride home, he just shared his testimony, his life and his story. And we got to my house. It was, what's it called? I want to say it was April Street or Heather Street or something, a block away from my house. And he says, do you mind if I pray with you to accept Christ in your life? It's like, no, man, let's do it. And did. And since then, man, it's been this up and down, crazy left and right Christian journey of how do I live in a non-Christian environment, which is football, with Christian beliefs. And I'm not the perfect consummate guy. Obviously, when I got divorced, I went haywire. Yeah. But at this point in my life, man, I got a sturdy base. And I don't just say it because some guy said it. I have a lot of weird experiences in life to where I cannot make sense of life or anything that just took place outside of some higher power. So that's where it all came from.
Man, also fascinating. And then so how does the business start to grow? And then how do you transition from, you know, the brick and mortar gym world to getting on more stages? And then from there, having something that can influence and I don't even know, like, what is your, do you have a main course, online course that you sell, or is it through group coaching, or what is it that you, that, yeah, you know, Anthony runs his kind of foundational business on these days?
Yeah, so it's a coaching business. We actually finally have this tool coming out, which I just met with the developers yesterday, but it's called the Shift Method. And it's a coaching program. It's four tiers, from membership to a Shift Starter, Shift Incubator, Shift Accelerator, which is the mastermind. It's all based in Shift. And the whole thing is based around a ton of support, an amazing tool that gets you down to take all this thought process behind crafting and architecting ideal identity and take it down to daily five things you do to create and shift into a new identity, right? It's all about the actions. If you think about James Clear's work or BJ Fosworth, they talk about identity. But the thing is no one thinks about like, hey, well, how do I craft and architect that ideal identity? I know my habits will get me there, but like, which ones do I choose based on who I want to become? And how do I get into action? And so like, I went through all my life and unpacked it. I did a lot of research and put a lot of people through things and found, okay, if we just do this work and then dial it into this method, do people come out 90 days later, completely different humans? So the way that came to be was, again, by a weird turn of events. I was consulting for a fire company in the fitness space, and some guy named Jadon Cherry says, hey, I'm going to film some videos of you, and we're going to put them online so people can access them. I'm like, what witchcraft are you talking about right now? It's before I knew of Craig Ballantyne's turbulence training and everything. I was like, what are you talking about? Put things on the internet, huh?
Man, so you're talking like 2014, 2015?
Exactly. It was 2014. 100%. Wow. It was. Yeah. It was like, this was around April, May. It was like, right. As a matter of fact, it was a month after my mom passed, I want to say, is when I happened across this guy in Jadon's ideas. And he says, check out this guy, Brendan Burchard. He has something called Experts Academy. I'm like, what? So I go to a Starbucks and Brent would sit there and watch this guy on the computer. I'm like, this is crazy. So I might be able to turn my story into something people may like, you know? Well, lo and behold, he has his events in Santa Clara, which is about an hour from my house. I'm like, I'll go to this Experts Academy event. I go to the event. If you've ever been to one of his events, the dude pretty much just, he tells you different stuff, sitting in a little area as a group. And so I show up completely green. I know nobody. Nobody knows me. I don't even know this world exists. And there's hugging and clapping. I'm like, what are you doing? Talking to each other, right? I get into it. Like day number two, he has people get up and tell your story to a group of people. I'm in the back of the room. We get a little group. I tell my story, parts of it. People are like, damn, it's a crazy story. Like you just did.
Sure.
Right. What I don't know is one of the girls that was in that little group was just she was a volunteer for the team. Her name was Cammy. She was Jeremy's fiance. Jeremy is Mel's son. Mel is Brendan's main security. So somehow the story gets back to Brendan's team with this guy with this crazy story. And I'm just showing up. I'm happy. No big deal. Somebody stops in the hallway, says, hey, tell me your story real quick. I tell the story because I'm in a happy mood now. They got me. I drink the Kool-Aid, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Name's Denise. And I tell her my story. She goes, oh, okay, great. And walks away. Nothing more.
Is that Brendan's wife?
No, Denise. Well, he has a wife named Denise. Denise was his right hand. She used to be like his main, you know, kind of company. And so she said, they kept following me, I guess. And I kept going to events. At one point, they're like, hey, do you want to volunteer? I was like, yeah, I'd love to volunteer. So I volunteer and I start hanging out and just kind of learning like the back end of what they're doing. Had no intention of meeting Brendan, to be totally honest, because like I came from the football world. Like I met professional big name guys. I'm like, they're just humans, man. They still, they poop and they pee and they stink. And they're human beings, dude. And eventually got to the point where he needed me or someone needed me to escort him to like his room. So I'm like, you know, escort him and showing him his room, like supporting, you know, kind of the security thing and ask what's your story, tell him my story. And at one point we have this discussion about this fitness thing I did, or at one point I had a consulting product, Gym in a Bag, and I ended up making this thing for large corporations. Like, hey, bring it over. I want to check it out. Cause I travel and work out a lot. Cool. Brought it to him. He's like, we're going to make this. I'm like, all right. So all of a sudden we're business partners in a product that I made out of a random weird way. Wow. And little by little, I start to
What was the product?
It was called High Performance Workout. If you go to hyper, it's a 90-day Gym in a Bag challenge. It's like a gym in a bag. I made, to be honest, when I was divorced, I had dated a flight attendant and she was traveling. And so I got a bag, put some stuff in it and send it off with her. And it became a product that I brought to a corporation that they liked that I then told Brendan about and made it. And little by little, he got to know me. And then he brought me to this mastermind where it was like me, him, Dean Graziosi, Lewis House, Jeff Walker, Russell Brunson, Trent Shelton, all these amazing brains. And we're in a room or like outside actually in Wyoming and we're telling our stories. And I tell my story. I have a brand called Trust Your Hustle. And one of the guy goes, Ethan says, I don't like it. I go, what do you mean you don't like it? He goes, I don't like it. I was like, there's a messenger and a message. He says, as the messenger, you have to have like the abilities, which you have. You can talk, speak, share. You got that. But the message doesn't land. If those don't connect, you can't make impact. He's like, you know, I get the whole hustle thing. Everybody hustles, right? He says, but what I want to know is how'd you navigate the different parts of your identity from like the foster kid to the only black kid in a white family to like having a kid at a young age and the college and then leaving NFL and then divorce, finding your dad. Like he's like, how'd you do all that? How'd you get to these levels where most people get stuck on one of them? He's like, how'd you get in this group? How'd you get here? And everybody in the group, even Brandon was like, yeah, it's a good question. Like no one's talking about identity. He's like, you have a ridiculously weird identity. You've navigated it well. He's like, that's an area to dig into. So that started a whole precipice of me like opening this door of identity and realizing, oh, damn, I got a weird strength in this area that not only do I have a connection personally to, but like I really enjoy the research, understanding the brain. And like no one's really brought it to the forefront in this way. There's a couple people in the world that are phenomenal at this area as well. Like Alter Ego Effect, Mr. Herman, who's actually a buddy, man. And Todd's an amazing mind, so helpful, such a huge, great soul. But as I unpack this world, that's how I got to this level. And then the rest of the coaching, I'd always been a fitness guy. So I wasn't coaching. Yeah. And then I just turned my brain on. I do not want to be seen as the dumb jock. So I spent a lot of time in books, a lot of time in research, a lot of time in figuring out what I need to know. So it's not just me piggybacking off a story, but I actually have something of substance for people.
You mentioned the five things. Are they like five core principles that you know apply to me as they apply to you, or does everybody have their five things that need to be done? I believe it was daily that move you ahead.
Yeah. No, so what I did is so here's the thing. It's a lot of thinking that we do as people. We do a lot of, you know, brainstorming and all of. And then what happens is people fail to have any way to bring it to life or no process, no system. And I'm sure you can attest to this. You probably get a lot of clients. You give them all the information and it never gets executed on. Like it never gets brought to life. Yeah. So what I found is like, if I can take some things and then, you know, synthesize them down to some daily things, it'd work. And what I created was called Shift, S-H-I-F-T. Okay. Now this isn't the entire method. This is like the spear, like the tip of the spear, we'll call it. Yeah. There's a whole spear behind it. It's just the tip. And what happens is this is how we enter the world. The first part is S, which means start right. So we talked actually on my podcast yesterday about like morning routines, right? So I believe that people have got to start their morning a certain way or to start their day correctly, right? So most people kind of wake up, the alarm goes off and they're sprinting to the day and they don't even get a chance to breathe and know what's going on until the back end. So my first part of S is start right. Whether it's a customized individual, whatever you create for your morning routine, create something. Like I'm actually a proponent of not borrowing somebody else's. Like we talked yesterday, like you have your process. I use mine. I'm trying yours here next week. There's the different people, different things, right? But I'm like, create your own, but start the damn day right, right? The H becomes a healthy choice. So the H should be something you make as a healthy choice for you. And there's a couple reasons why. One is because we need to be healthier as humans, right? We want to have longer lives, be more focused, right? People don't make healthy choices either physically or mentally. So like there should be something you do that gives you a physical ability to have a healthy choice, which could be, I mean, maybe you drink water instead of a soda today. Maybe you have an apple instead of a candy bar. I'm not talking about work out like crazy. Mm-hmm. And then a healthy choice mentally might be, man, take a breather, meditate, take a break, take a vacation, make a healthy choice for yourself. So if you do some every day, what happens is not only do you feel better, but you have more of like a confidence identity-wise of self. It's a repetition of doing healthy things to feel good. The I becomes the imperative activity. I'm really big on the idea that you can't achieve without transforming and you can't transform without achieving. Now, is it possible? I'm sure it is. But like when anybody's transformed, it's because they did something, achieve something. So I have this reason to transform, right?
Whenever I'll just add to that. Like in my fitness business, I ran 32 transformation contests, you know, the 12-week contests, thousands of entries. And we would make people write a little 200-word thing. So I've read thousands of those. And I agree with you, because I always say is you can't have a mental or a physical transformation without a mental transformation. If you change your body, you're not the same person.
Exactly.
And even when I give people, like now I give people 30-day video challenges, make a 1-minute video for every single day for the next 30 days, and you will not be the same person. So I'm right on board with you there.
Dude, I'm 100%. I did a video a day in the beginning of this for 1,333 straight days, 3.65 years, called the Nightly 90. And that is what allowed me to be able to speak and talk and share probably more than anything else. I don't say ums and ahs. I just talk.
Exactly.
Extemporaneous, right? So the idea was, you have to have something that allows you to achieve and transform. And so even if it's like an achievement, I got to transform, or transformation, vice versa. So what I realize is people don't actually do a great job of eating the elephant one bite at a time. So the I becomes the imperative activity. And a lot of what I do in that space is people want to achieve a specific goal. I need you to take that thing and break it apart into at least 30 days, you know, hopefully at most 30 days. Because what it does, it allows them to where like, hey, whatever that thing is for the day, you do not go to bed until that step is completed. I don't care what you do in the rest of the day. You can have multiple things going on, but whatever your imperative activity is for today, get it done. So you want to launch a podcast, create a course, you want to be a speaker, you want to fix your marriage. You got to have this plan in place. And so what we do is once it's in place, every day you do it. You pick that little thing and you knock it off, right? So the imperative activity gets done. The F is find joy, because I think we're tuned for negativity. Like the moment somebody says, hey, can you do this thing? Your brain goes to, why can't I do this thing? Immediately, right? So I was like, what if I found a way to tune me for like positive? So I find joy in three ways. What am I grateful for? Seriously, like at the end of the day, if I haven't done it yet, what am I grateful for? I'm grateful I got through this day. I'm grateful I got to hang out with Craig Ballantyne. You know, like that's dope. The other way you can do it is a silver lining. That if something goes wrong, I got to find this silver lining, because if I can see something within the craziness, it gives me hope of a possibility of something better. I got to see a silver lining. If I can't do any of those, the last one is I got to seek an outside perspective. So I got to call somebody and say, hey, man, I can't figure it out. And I believe perspective precedes enlightenment. So if I get this new perspective, I go, oh, I never thought of it that way. Okay, hey, thanks, man. Now I can tune for joy and have a little bit of hope. I'm happier. The last part is what I call a tree task. It's part of the work we do. You heard the wheel of life, right? The whole wheel aspect. I created a concept based around a tree. We have roots, which is faith, family, health, friends, and emotions, what keep us grounded. So if the storms of life hit us, we're grounded, but also it keeps deep roots to create nutrients, right? Like a tree, to produce fruits, faith, family, health, friends, and emotions. And what I look at is every one of those things, they're life experience things you can improve upon. And I have people actually numerically base them and then figure out what's an activity you can do to increase that. And every day you can choose to do one of the 10. You don't do all 10 every day, but every day you do one of the 10. If you do that every day over 90 days, you've done 90 things to improve the experience of your life. You've found joy every day. You've made a progression in some area that's going to give you pride and progress. You've been able to have some healthy choice, and you've started your day right. When people go through it, we've done the planning in the background. Bro, it's amazing. Like people come out of that, and all I did was create a really good rhythm for them based on what they already wanted to do in the first place.
What are some of your favorite success stories of people that even live like, wow? I mean, you've seen a lot of people go through this, but you're still like, wow. Tell me about one or two of those.
I got a guy, I just talking to him earlier today, of all things. He sent me a message on Instagram. His name's Frank Benedetto. He owns a company called Honey Badger Project.
You know, Frank is a client of mine.
Oh, dude, Frank's awesome. Yeah,
yes, so Frank's business partner. Yeah.
Exactly. Boom. Right. So Frank came in years ago at like an influencer event I had gone to, and he was like, he had sold a business for $1 million. It's crazy. Sold a business for $1 million and didn't believe that he was capable of doing anything like that again. He thought it was an accident. So we worked through a lot of this. He went from making like $3,000 a month. I think he's surpassed like $100,000 a month now at this point.
Oh, he's getting close to $200K with his coaching. Like he's in another coaching program where he got like the kind of the funnel building to go to the next level. But yeah, he is just, killing it. Only been in like the last 12 weeks or 16 weeks.
Exactly. And it started out before any of that, I guess. I got a hold of him earlier, right? Then I got Natasha, who's up in Canada, and she's awesome because she came in and she had this idea of wanting to be a coach. She does Concussion Compass, this concussion program. It's a whole symphony therapy up in Canada. Yeah. And we were trying to get her to take action, but she couldn't really press out to find a way to launch her program. She wanted to push something off till January. I was like, no, we're doing it in December. Like, but I'm traveling and like, you can still hold calls. And so we figured it out. She ended up having the most successful financial month. And then fast forward, COVID hits. And she's like, I got to take everything online. I'm like, great, you can do it. Then we're going to figure out how to teach other people to do it. She's like, wait, I'm not the person that teaches people to do that stuff online. Yeah, you are. You're going to be. And so we ended up like going through the process, figuring out what had to be done. And she launched a program in 4 weeks, made 90 grand. And because I think she served 400 brand new businesses that were all trying to like get online as well. She won the award in British Columbia for, I think it was like excellence in leadership for 2020.
That's amazing. Like, that's where I live now, is in British Columbia. So I'll have to look her up.
Look her up, Natasha Wilt. She's awesome. Like these are, and then I got people that save marriage. I've saved marriages, oddly enough. It's not just one.
Well, I don't think it's anything odd about, like, that should be an expected thing. And because having a shift in your identity changed marriages for sure. I mean, look at it, saved your own.
Saved my own marriage. This whole thing. I do things I've already done. I mean, I've had a guy, Melvin McDowell, dude, he was operating out of a church's therapy business. And he now has opened his third physical practice, lost 100 pounds, retired his wife, and can spend time with the kids. Amazing. Like it's crazy. And the thing is, I'm not smarter than a lot of these people. I'm not. It's just, I can take what all this craziness is. And I have a weird process I use. It's a shift method that pulls all apart and applies it in a unique way that allows them to kind of siphon and kind of funnel everything down to a simple process. And if you do it right and think through it in advance, well, it's super powerful.
And I think that's where the genius teachers lie, is in codifying something that is incredibly complex into a simple method like you have there, where somebody in 90 days through the consistency of going through the shift method can absolutely transform. So that's super powerful. So aside from this conversation, sir, where can people learn more about this? And should they follow you on Instagram, or is your best stuff on YouTube?
It's a good question.
Let us know.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff everywhere. My team and I, we're focusing heavily right now on Instagram and YouTube, but Instagram is where I personally hang out. Yeah. Not that I don't anywhere else, but like I'm constantly on there, sending messages, going back and forth. But if anyone wants to know anything, just go to textanthony.com and then you can access kind of everything through text message.
Very cool. Appreciate it. And we connected through Instagram pretty randomly one day too. And it's great to have this conversation. I'm super grateful. And the book, what's the title of the book? The
book's called Identity Shift: Upgrade How You Operate to Elevate Your Life.
Amazing. And that'll be officially out in September or earlier?
Officially out in September. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm in the middle of the edits still, but I'm excited, man. It's a good book. I think it takes this stuff and it makes it simplistic. And for my own personal, like, present to the world, and the way I look at it is like Carol Dweck had Mindset, and she put it out. And before then, the world kind of heard of it, but now it's a staple. And I believe that done correctly, like Identity Shift, can hold another same area in terms of its strength, because it does encapsulate your mindset. If you're of that identity, mindset's part of it. It's your beliefs are part of it. And so I'm looking forward to having this book hopefully be a good anchor down for that kind of category and help build from there.
Yeah. And the world needs it now more than ever. So last thing, what are you most excited about in your future?
Oh, man, my wife's birthday is next week. People don't know this. We're taking a trip to Florida. At the end of the day, I love my family, man. I love the ability to spend time. This COVID's been great for us just to be at home. Like, we have a really good relationship. Nothing takes family takes no backseat to business. The business is what I love to do. I serve the world, but people don't get it misconstrued. Like, I love what I do because it makes me happy and it brings revenue so I can spend time in joy and facilitating great experience with the family. So that's my core, man.
I love it. All right, everybody, go grab his book and make sure to check out his podcast too as well. I was just on it recently, the Awe Shift podcast. You'll be able to find it in all the good places. All right. Thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. That was like one of the most incredible stories I've ever had on the Early to Rise podcast. If you have not gone and checked out any of Anthony's stuff, please do get his book when it comes out. It's so in line with so many of the things that I learned in the fitness industry. And I know that it's going to make a massive change for you too. So grab Identity from Anthony Trucks and make sure to visit him at textanthony.com to learn more about him. All right. So I can't wait to do the next show with you. And if you haven't already gotten my books, I would love to give you a free copy of my latest, The Perfect Week Formula. Go to craigsent.me/perfect week. Grab that to make time to do the stuff that Anthony has taught you today. And if you love this show, head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Go over to Instagram, send me a message at @RealCraigValentine, or email us at support@earlytorise.com and let us know how this is going to shift your life.